Welcome to the Fabric Podcast and the conversation we're calling Don't Feed the Animals. Have you ever noticed emotions, reactions, and tendencies just below the surface? It's like we have animals inside us, and if we feed them, they grow. So if we don't feed the animals, what do we feed? Here's Greg Meyer with some food for thought.
For those of you who haven't been keeping track, it is week 29 of us as a virtual-only community. That's 7 months. And it's been 18 weeks since the killing of George Floyd, about a mile and a half from where I'm sitting right now. 4 months? Worrying on anybody? I mean, worrying because the pandemic alone would be enough, but then there is also the title changes brought by the racial injustice uprising. I mean, it's jobs, it's income, it's figuring out how to run businesses, family management, it's schooling, it's raising kids. I mean, you know, this is a long time and a lot of pressure, and there is no idea of when it's actually going to end. This is a rough time for all, and it's an absolutely devastating time for some. So I've been listening to the undercurrent of my own feelings these days. And even though they're sometimes masked by the warm weather and the wonderful colors of summer and now fall, they trend pretty grim. I figure you too have an undercurrent of emotion that you can't shake that's coloring everything else. So trying to gauge this, I put up this simple experiment, this question on Facebook just a couple days ago. I asked, in one word, how are you feeling these days? I figured I'd get a dozen or so responses that would kind of orient me. And I was floored when I had nearly 100 in no time. People from every part and period of my life let me know. People I had no idea would even see this question. And while there was a wide range of responses, it leaned decidedly, what should I say? Yeah, heavy. There were many who said blessed, grateful, and thankful, even a few hopefuls and optimistics. But the most common words were all on that heavy side. Tired, overwhelmed, anxious, and exhausted were the big four. Now, I asked for one word, and I know one word can't tell the whole story. I not only have multiple feelings right now, I've got multiple categories of feelings. Somehow, discouraged can live alongside content in me. But it's an uneasy pairing, and contentment doesn't rest undisturbed. Yeah, that's what life is like right now. So, these animals we're not supposed to feed. What did they have to do with this malaise that has gripped us? Well, I'd say that in tough times like these, compassion and understanding and togetherness are more important than ever, even though they're harder to come by than normal. But if we're going to find that compassion, that understanding and togetherness, we have to calm the animals, the feelings, the reactions and inclinations inside you and me that easily come center stage when we're stressed like we are these days, and then undercut our ability to be the people we want and that we need to be. I mean, feel like they should be calling the shots because, you know, they're natural emotions and reactions to what we're experiencing. You know, kind of like, why shouldn't I be angry? Did you see what they did to me? Or what's wrong with judging those people? They're all being stupid. Yeah, we've heard all that sort of stuff. We've felt that sort of stuff. And it can feel so good to let all that energy out through those animals. But being natural emotions to feel doesn't make them the right way to deal with what you are experiencing. That's more complicated. You are more complicated. And the parts of you that will help you navigate these difficult waters are fragile and vulnerable ways of being that require attention. They require nurturing. They take time. Now, those animals, like we've been talking about for the last couple weeks, they're meant to tell you something. They're important as sources of information, but not of living. They have a place on the bus of your life, but they should not be driving it. When we do let them do the driving, call the shots, determine our actions, people get hurt. And while you probably feel some relief when you release that anger, when you indulge in fault-finding, when you pass judgment or succumb to shame, it also takes a toll on you, taking you further from your heart, from the way you were meant to be connected to yourself and to others and to what we call God, or as Jesus put it, the kingdom of heaven, by which he did not mean a place you go after you die, but a reality that's waiting for us right now when we live woven in that three-stranded way of self and of others and of God. The animal we are dealing with today is hatred. geez, I mean, the word itself feels bad. It sounds kind of ugly. A lot like the picture that the artist created for the topic this week. I mean, he really caught it. You can see that image on our podcast page. So, what is this animal hatred? I describe it this way. Hatred is an extreme dislike, disdain, or disgust. Hatred is to have ill will towards something, to wish that whatever you hate didn't exist because it only has negative value for you. To make it personal, and we need to hate something or someone is to wish they were dead. That may sound dramatic, but I'm afraid it is simply honest. That's where hatred wants to go. That's why this is an animal that we need to talk about today. Okay, you're a nice person, I'm sure. And while you may throw the word hate around from time to time, it's really just about lima beans or your favorite sport team's rival. I mean, you, like most people, you don't really hate anything. I wish that were true. But I'm afraid that hatred, the animal hatred, is in each of us. And its voice is heard from time to time. And if we feed it, when we hear it, it grows quickly and it gets scary and dangerous. If you're like me, you'll fall back on the fact that everyone has dislikes and preferences. I mean, we all have people and things that we've got a bone to pick with, but we don't hate them. That, too, unfortunately, is a game we play with ourselves around socially unacceptable behaviors and attitudes. We want to conform to socially accepted norms. So, to convince ourselves and others that we don't have those feelings, when they show up, we simply call them by their names. I don't hate, I just dislike, or I have problems with. Remember Hagrid from the Harry Potter series? He was, you know, the keeper of keys and animals at Hogwarts. He had one animal, one pet, that he called Fluffy. But Fluffy was a three-headed, fanged, drooling, monstrous dog that guarded the Sorcerer's Stone, ready to gobble up anyone who came near. The fact that Hagrid called him Fluffy didn't change that. Now, maybe your dislike, your not my preference, or I've got a bone to pick with, is just that, just some casual dislike. Those exist, and that's fine. Maybe your Fluffy is a cute and cuddly poodle. But just because you call it Fluffy doesn't make it cozy and friendly, a la Hagrid. And even when it is, it only takes a little pressure, a little too much frustration, one more straw to wake up the less innocent feelings, reactions, and inclinations of hatred. You see, that's how hatred hides and grows unseen within us, and it needs to get called out. Jesus was prone to hyperbole, which means extreme statements. He didn't say them to exaggerate, but to make a point, to get our attention, to wake us up to what was brewing inside us. It was a way he did some truth-telling so that we could do some truth-hearing. So, he said lots of fiery things, but one way he repeatedly did it was to draw a sharp contrast by saying, "You have heard it said," which would usually be bad enough, "but I am telling you," which would be a lot tougher. I mean, here are a couple that get at what we are talking about. Jesus said, "You have heard it said, you shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I am telling you that if you are angry with a brother or sister or insult them, you will be liable to judgment." Yeah, you know, he's taken away our defenses here. He's letting us know that you like to think these things don't apply to you. I mean, you're good people and good people don't hate, good people don't murder, but it's closer than you think. The critter is inside you. It's inside all of us, and no one is immune from the influence that it can have in our lives. Again, Jesus goes on, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy." Yeah, Jesus, thank you. I knew there was an acceptable form of hate. Besides the silly hatred of foods that I can't stand and the Chicago Bears, sorry, Chicago folks, there are also obviously bad things like enemies. I'm supposed to hate those, right? And Jesus says, "But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." He stands a couple things on their head here. First, he says, no, don't hate them, love them. And then he goes on to redefine what an enemy is. Someone we think it is okay to hate. They're people to pray for, he's telling us. They're people to love. They are people to care about. A couple days ago, I took part in a town hall forum with some of the black leaders of the 38th in Chicago, George Floyd Square. They were talking about the future of the square. amazing people in conversation. One of them was Steve Floyd, no relation to George Floyd. Steve is a senior advisor with the Agape movement that is working with gangs and others in the community to, as he says, put the neighbor back in the hood. Trying to help us all understand black men who are part of gangs, he said, and this is loosely quoted from the best I can remember it, "We look at what some people do and we ask, what's wrong with them? That's the wrong question to ask. We should be asking, what happened to them?" Wow, you know, he's right. These people that we're conditioned to see as enemies, there's a history behind them. People aren't just the way they are, positive or negative, out of nowhere. I mean, Steve's life is dedicated to loving and caring about and for people whom others see as enemies, people others consciously or unconsciously hate, people who need a better question asked of them. Jesus wants us to ask those better questions too, to see each other as people deserving love and care, even when the emotion that gets triggered by our experience with them is hatred. Your enemies, they persecute you, they bother you, they offend you, they threaten you. But does that mean you've got a license to hate them? Or is your hate's job simply to wake you up to something that leads a completely different direction, like caring for them, recognizing that you need to understand them better, waking you up to the possibility that there is something to appreciate in them, or that you just might have a responsibility for, not just an objection to them? Okay, let's backtrack for a moment. We've said each week that there is a reason why these animals are inside us. They've got a role to play. They give us important information, but usually bad advice. So what is it with hatred? If it is so bad, what good does it do? What purpose does it play? Well, that's what I was just talking about. That feeling of hatred is telling you that there is something precious to you, something that you care about or love that is threatened. Now, you can take that hatred and hurl it at the object of your hate, or you can listen to it. Listen carefully to understand what it is in you and what it is in them that is making you feel or react that way, and what you should do about it. Because one thing is clear, you need to do something. Now, after telling us that we should love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us, Jesus tells us why. He says, "So that you may be children of your Father in heaven." Children of your Father in heaven. What does that mean? Well, it's not a heavenly adoption service, and heaven isn't a reference to some non-earthly place, and neither does Father mean God as a man. No, your Father in heaven is Yahweh, the I am who I am, the fully whole, complete, encompassing all thingsness. And to be a child of that is to be part of what God fully is, part of what makes your life whole and gives your life meaning. And all that starts with listening to, but not acting on, not feeding that animal inside you and me called hatred. Now, I don't think, or at least I hope I don't have to convince you to not let this animal grow and start calling shots in your life, but that's not really the challenge here. The challenge is to not blind yourself to the possibility that even though you are a good person, the hatchling of hate is still inside you. And in some places and at some times, it is growing. Fear, envy, anger, judging, I mean, those we're willing to admit to. They don't seem like such big deals, but hatred sounds bad. So we pretend we have nothing to do with it and it has nothing to do with us. But, and you know this already, denying the existence of these animals doesn't make them go away. It empowers them. And that's certainly true with hatred. So like some invasive species, we need to learn to recognize it and deal with it before it takes over and crowds out what is true to our hearts, what makes us be, as Jesus put it, a child of our Father in heaven, part of I am who I am woven into the fabric of existence. Okay, hatred. You know, there are a lot of animals we could be talking about, and this is not the easiest one to take on. So why? Why spend 1 week dealing with hatred? Because it factors into some of our biggest problems as a society and as individuals today. It probably always has, but it feels more powerful and dangerous today as it hides in its disguised forms within us. Let me ask you a question. Does the relationship between innocent dislike and the more dangerous hatred remind you of the relationship between non-racism and racism. It does me. Like hatred, no one wants to be associated with racism, and that makes us blind to its presence within us. You don't get rid of it. You just learn how to notice it, deal with the feelings it raises within you, and not feed them. But because we pretend it isn't there, we let it hide, and are not dealing with it only empowers it. Folks, racism is a form of hatred. With hatred, we like to back off to dislike and think that makes us okay. But the call isn't to just dislike it, is it? I mean, Jesus didn't say, love your friends and don't hate your enemies, just dislike them. No, he said, love your friends and love your enemies. In terms of racism, it looks like this. Jesus didn't say, love your friends and don't be racist towards people you don't know or understand, just be non-racist towards them. No, he'd be saying, love those you don't know and understand and be anti-racist. Anti-racist. Define them as friends and family. Work for their equivalence among you. After all, you are all one, all brothers and sisters, all children of the one God. When we call racism fluffy and hide behind non-racism, it gets passed on from person to person, from generation to generation, and becomes so accepted, so normal, so much a part of how society and therefore we as individuals operate that we don't even see it anymore. The fact that its power becomes part of how society operates relieves us as individuals from actually having to do it ourselves. It's done for us. Resmaa Menakem, in his book, My Grandmother's Hands, helps us see how racism becomes culture, simply the way things are, so that we can just shrug our shoulders and accept its effect as if there is nothing that we can do about it. After all, it's just the way things are. I mean, that allows us to ask the wrong question, as Steve Floyd put it, wondering, what's wrong with that person, instead of what happened or what is happening to that person. It makes us reduce the wake-up call of Jesus' message from love your enemies to just don't hate your enemies. But when we can all be comfortable claiming that the animal of hatred and its sibling racism are in us, no matter our culture, our race, our ethnicity, our income, or our education, and that we need to see the feelings, the reactions, the inclinations that they kick up in us as a flashing red light warning us that it's going to be harder than usual to understand and appreciate that person or that idea, then we are getting somewhere. Racism. Deep breath, huh? But there's another place we need to talk about hatred hiding out today. It's in our political and our cultural polarization. We've got an election day coming up in less than 40 days. I hope you are registered, and if you haven't, take time to figure it out and do it today. And then vote. Get the information you need from a reliable source and cast your ballot. And then let others know you did it and encourage them to vote too. Thank you. It's important. Anyway, the election and now the Supreme Court appointment after Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death have intensified feelings and attitudes that were already straining so that we are fracturing the United States of America into something other than what that name indicates. You probably noticed how many dis words disguise hatred. Well, I'd say another is disagree. Our disagreement with each other is hurting ourselves. It too often isn't afraid to hurt others, and it definitely is hurting us collectively. Now, if we go back to that list of I'm feeling in just one word that I talked about at the beginning of this podcast, I wonder how many of those words chosen were influenced by the contentiousness that is going on in our country, not just the pandemic. For me, frankly, I can't sort them out from one another. Now, I bring this up because it's only a small step from fueling our disagreements with one another to feeding the hatred within ourselves. We can't afford to let that happen. It's a hard thing. The only thing we truly have. Remember last week? Above all, guard your heart, for it is a source of life. Now, I'm not encouraging anyone to give up on their ideals, to let up on issues of justice in order to just get along. What I'm saying is that when these precious things in us feel threatened, when we encounter people and ideas that we don't understand, hatred is going to wake up. It will stretch its arms and it will start murmuring. Listen to it. Wonder where it is directing your attention, but don't feed it. Here's what I know. Maybe it's not true for you, but if you too are a human being, it probably is. When that animal of hatred gets big inside of me, my ability to tell the difference between not liking your ideas and not liking you gets blurry. Love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. It's hard, but you already knew it would be, didn't you? Okay, last thing here. How are you going to do this? Practice. Practicing, in particular, when and on situations that are easy, so that you have the skills you need when it's not. Here are a couple steps that might be helpful to you. Number one, acknowledge that there is hatred within you. That doesn't make you a bad person. It just means that you are a person. Its presence isn't the problem. It's what you do with it, and not doing anything with it isn't the answer. Spending enough time with this acknowledgement that you can name some of the things that it typically attaches to will make the step real for you. Say the name of the ideas, the things, the people that your hatred has a tendency to focus on, and do it without judging yourself for them. Acknowledgement alone is important and this first step. Number two, listen for hatred in its smallest forms, waking up and stretching its arms and starting to talk to you in your ear. Conscious breathing is a great way to do this. We use breathing as a way to make us more mindful. Practice right now. Close your eyes if you wish. Sit up straight. Feel comfortable. And take some slow, deep breaths. Conscious breathing helps quiet our minds so that we can look deeper at our feelings and ask where they're coming from and what we might do with them. Learn to listen for hatred to speak as dislike or as disagreement or disrespect or disdain within you. And rather than acting out those emotions, let them trigger you to do this simple thing of breathe. Breathe. When you quiet yourself, do you notice the adrenaline pumping? Maybe the fidgetiness that's coming up? Maybe losing the ability to distinguish between people and their attitudes, losing interest in understanding more about someone or something? Let the steady rhythm of life flowing in and out dissolve those feelings and find your settled self behind them. Then, third, choose. Choose what you will do with the information these feelings are filling you with. Choose to better understand the other and yourself. Choose to ask a better question than whether you like the idea, the thing, the person that you are troubled by. Choose to love. Deep breath. Thank you. Hatred does not make the world go round. It grinds it to a halt, and it is up to each and every one of us to be the ones that stop feeding it. Acknowledge that hatred exists within you. Listen for its presence and let that trigger you to breathe, not act on it. And finally, choose. Choose to love.
It's worth keeping this conversation going. Share this podcast with a friend and find discussion resources at fabricmpls.com. You can also go to our contact page or reach out on social media to share your feedback and experiences, because Fabric isn't an organization sharing novel ideas. It's a community of people becoming more deeply woven. Thanks for being part of it.